I'm Dr. Pamela Brewer, and you are listening to Men's Monday here on Mind Talk, the show that provides you with relationship health and mental health information every day. On Men's Monday, we focus on all things for and about men.
Today we're going to be talking with someone who's going to help to answer a question that, quite frankly, I hear fairly often, which is wanting to know what your purpose is, what your goal in life is, or allow me to introduce you to today's guest, Mr. Linton Berkson. Linton Berkson is a sought-after speaker, author, and champion of change. He is also the author of Purposeful Vision, See Your Vision, and Know Your Purpose. Linton Berkson, welcome to Mind Talk.
Thank you, and thank you for having me on your show.
Well, I am delighted to have you on the program. You know, you've written, in the scheme of things, what is actually a tiny little book that actually could fit in a briefcase or a handbag, and yet it's chock full of lots of information. So let's get started, quite frankly, with the title, Purposeful Vision. Is that different from any other kind of vision? Are you talking about being more intentional in how you think, or what's going on with the title?
Well, the main thing in regard to the title is this. I think that we all have a purpose.
Okay.
And I think the difference between having a vision that is not tied to your purpose is that you're not emotionally connected to it.
Ah.
And what happens to a vision that is not tied to your purpose is very simple, is that the vision will change as life goes on. You feel as though you're drifting, and you'll start many things and never finish anything.
And we know a lot of people like that.
Go ahead.
We know a lot of people like that whose ideas about what they should do change over and over again.
Yes. And that's because what happens is they're searching for something to give them purpose. But when you have purpose and the vision that you have, you are emotionally connected to it. So if you look throughout history, we'll see that a lot of leaders and individuals who did great things had a deep emotional and passionate connection to that vision. And it never leaves them. So it's something they have to do, it's something that is consistent, and it's something that they follow through on.
Well, so what do you say to those folks who spend, I don't know, half their adult life, let's say, doing X, and then wake up one morning and decide they never really wanted to do that, they wanted to do something else? What's going on with that individual?
Well, I think there's influences in our lives, Pamela, and that's what happens with us, is that we can be influenced by different people, by our parents and by our friends, who may make ongoing, continuing suggestions as what we should or shouldn't do, who we should marry, what our life should look like. And one day, they may wake up and think to themselves, this is not the life that I signed up for. This is not my vision. I'm living everybody else's life. And so suddenly, they have this awakening within them that they feel, I want to do what I was given to do. And it's that still small voice in them that perhaps if they look back many years ago was speaking to them the whole time. They weren't just listening to it. They were listening to everybody else.
So in a lot of ways, although it may be painful to a person when they or if they come to the belief that they've been living their lives for other people, the really good news about it is that they are able to come to a place and a space where they can recognize that and then do something about it. So that's actually pretty good. I know a lot of people feel that they've sort of wasted their lives beforehand if they discover that what they really want to do is not what they've been doing.
Absolutely, and that's a great point to make, because never give up.
Okay.
Never feel that at any time that you can't attain or complete a vision or something that you feel. It's never too late to start. And that's what I always say, get started.
Never
and
too
that
late.
Is right.
Okay, never
yeah.
too late. You also say, at the very beginning of your book, you say you cannot create anything you want from life if you cannot see it as a possibility. Say more about that.
Okay. And the reason I say that is very simple, is that everything starts, in my opinion, with your imagination. It doesn't make any difference what it is. And the imagination, whether it's remodeling a kitchen, you have to see it. You have to know what you want, what it would look like before you start the project. And as you see it, you begin to feel it. As you feel it, it creates an emotion within you that causes you to act. So the reason I mention that is that the vision allows you to have an emotional connection, excitement about what it is that you're trying to create. So if you can't see it and you can't feel it and you can't get emotionally attached to it, you're not going to have the ability to sustain yourself to complete it, and all the naysayers will get the better of you.
And there'll be a lot of naysayers, or at least there can be. For a lot of people, the word, the concept, imagination is kind of a dirty word. I mean, you know, it's not real, it's fake, it's fantasy. But you're saying it's absolutely critical and important.
Absolutely, Pamela. Let me ask you this. The intangibles in life, are they something we can prove?
Good point.
We can't prove faith.
Good point.
But these are things that we need, but we can't prove them. For want of a better term, just to give an example, can we prove gravity? I know that physics has done to some extent, but if we didn't have all that scientific evidence behind gravity, we couldn't prove that it exists, but we know that if we jump up, we come down.
Right.
So all right. Those intangibles in life we can't prove. Can we actually prove intuition? Can we prove faith? But we do know they exist, and where they come into play is when we reach a brick wall that we have no answer to, then these tools have to come into play, and they're critical to our happiness because I call them messengers. And the messengers are intangible, and the reason they're intangible is because they exist in realms maybe a little bit out of what we call the conscious mind.
Mm-hmm.
That's where imagination exists.
So from the very outset, you're really encouraging the reader, the listener, to look carefully within themselves and not so much focusing on who and what is on the outside.
Yes. Look within. Feel within. Understand what's going on. And I know that's been used a lot. But as you get yourself in tune, that's what I call it, in tune with oneself, you get intuitive perception. So there's three states of consciousness that I mentioned in my book, superconscious, conscious, and subconscious. And so the superconscious state is where you are in tune with yourself and you get that aha moment and you actually say this to yourself. And we all know we do this, Pamela. I can see myself doing that. Have you ever said that to yourself?
Yeah, it's interesting.
It is, isn't it? Because I can see myself doing that. If you think for a moment about our vocabulary, we put that under the carpet. But if I can see myself doing that, why do we tell people that?
Interesting. There's something going on, isn't there?
There definitely is. Because our language and the way that we share our vision or experiences with people, I strongly suggest if we take a moment to listen to ourselves and the way that we're speaking, there is something profound going on within all of us. And getting back to the example I just gave, why would you say to your friends or to anybody, you know, I can see myself doing that? And that's why I say you have to see it first before you can do it.
Now, there are, as you know, certainly a lot of people who would love to do any number of things in their lives, but there's almost a fear. I mean, I think about perhaps a young actor who would love to be able to see themselves in a certain way, but they really have a hard time. Perhaps they're worried, perhaps they're anxious, perhaps any number of things. But the thing that they really want to be able to see is the thing that really makes them nervous and anxious and difficult to see. What happens in that kind of a scenario?
Pamela, that is a great question. And in the book that I've written there, you'll see, again, the three states of consciousness. And that's why I mentioned them, because you have to have all three states working in concert for that actor to make anything happen and manifest into reality. So let me explain that a little bit if I can.
Great.
So the actor has the superconscious state, which we call where imagination exists. So the actor can say, I can see myself doing that, right?
Okay.
What happens is now we go to one of the other states of consciousness, the subconscious state. That's a state where I believe all previous programming, fear, and uncertainty is stored and played back as you try to go forward.
Okay.
It's what your mother told you. It's what your brother told you. What your friends told you. It's experiences that you've had in the past that maybe weren't so successful. So you go to move forward, and that little subconscious mind comes up. In fact, I rephrase, a large subconscious mind comes up. And
indeed.
Says, who are you? Who are you to try and do that? Because that's what you're playing back from previous or past experiences. Now, I'll share one other thing, which is very tangible to most people, is we do it in relationships.
Mm.
even if we go out and date or whatever that we do, if a person looks or behaves a certain way like someone else, it's stored, then we say, oh, you must be like so-and-so. That may not be true.
Right.
So in answer to your question, it's the subconscious, it's the playback tape that is causing that individual to get fearful and anxious because they may have had experiences or self-talk, which again I cover in the book, that is not allowing them to move forward.
So in that case, when they've got these experiences, you know, let's say, I mean, even as you say it, I mean, it certainly makes a lot of sense. So let's say this actor has done all kinds of stuff in advance and, you know, lots of people have said all kinds of things and people can be very painful under the guise of being helpful. So this actor is listening to you now and is saying, you know, I really have been using those old experiences to hamper me, but maybe they're true, or maybe some of them are true, or I really don't want to be stuck with them, but I don't know how not to be stuck. Does the book guide you through how not to be stuck in those old experiences?
Absolutely. You see, what's happening is that's a habit. That's something that I cover in the book. It's etched in your brain. Let me explain that to you a little bit.
Okay.
Every time that we meet something in life that we would like to do that is new, let's say it's an actor wants to move forward and get a new role, or maybe they feel fearful about going forward for a role that may be some other realm they've been in before, they would have to change what I call your self-talk, wouldn't you?
Right.
Because guess what happens? The minute that you begin to think about doing something new, fear arises perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
And fear is your own mind, it's your own voice in your own head speaking to yourself, telling you that you cannot do something or you need to be fearful of it. Whose voice is in your head?
Good question.
It's yours. It's not your mother's. It's not your brother's. So when we listen to our own voice, I call it the self-talk, it begins to convince us about things that aren't true that are stored in our subconscious mind. What we have to begin to do is reprogram that, and I'll give a quick example of that.
Okay.
Let's say fear comes up. I say do it anyway, and this is what I mean by that. Just take the first step. Apply for the role. You may not get it, but go do it anyway, and then take each step at a time. And every time a negative thought or feeling or self-talk comes up in you, and it's going to take some work, that's what my book is about, mm-hmm. You have to say, I'm going to try anyway, and keep going forward one step at a time. And the way you create new belief systems is by creating stretch goals, which I cover in my book. And every time you create a stretch goal and you accomplish it, guess what happens to you?
Are you saying a stretch goal?
A stretch goal, yes.
And what is that?
It means you take yourself out of your comfort zone.
Okay.
And every time you take yourself out of your comfort zone and you achieve something, no matter how big or small it is, do you change what you believe about yourself now?
Interesting. Absolutely.
So that's what happens. That's how you begin to do it. So you don't have to do something big. You could do something small. In your example, you could just say, well, I'm not going to apply for that role. Apply for it. That's something small.
Okay.
Don't be fearful. Apply for it. Then you may get it. Now, you may not even have thought you would have got it, but now you've got it. That may have been a little stretch goal, so now you believe a little bit more in yourself.
Gotcha. And so it really is, it sounds like, being consistently mindful and gentle and open with yourself. It's a shift in all of that negative self-talk that we, too many of us, know much too much about.
Absolutely. And you see, we've heard about affirmations. We've heard about this programming of positive thinking and affirmations. I'm sure you know that. And so, in my opinion, without making things complicated, an affirmation is simply, what are you telling yourself every day about you? What do you get up and tell yourself about you every day? So if you get up every day and you believe in yourself and you believe that certain things can happen in your life and you have that self-talk, then that's your affirmation. But if you get up in the morning and you believe that someone told you you're worthless and that you can't do anything because that's what you believe and someone told you, that's your affirmation.
Right.
Your affirmation is whatever you choose to tell yourself about yourself. That's what it is.
Linton, we're going to take a break, but when we come back, I'd like to pick up with giving some examples of how to actually shift negative affirmations, and there are certainly a boatload of those, into positive affirmations, because I know particularly in these days and times, folks often have a hard time seeing the other side of a belief. So we'll start there when we come back, folks. This is Dr. Pamela Brewer. You're listening to Mind Talk, having a conversation with Linton Bergson, author of Purposeful Vision, See Your Vision, Know Your Purpose. We'll be right back. And we're back, folks. This is Pamela Brewer continuing the conversation with Linton Bergson as we talk about purposeful vision. And at the moment, we're talking about affirmations. The concept of performing daily affirmations is one that's certainly been around for a while. And I'm not sure that as many folks as we would like have a full awareness of really the power of positive affirmations and negative affirmations. So a lot of times people will say, well, I'd love to think differently, but I don't know how. So I'm going to ask you to sort of walk the listening audience through a how. Take a positive affirmation, really show how to shift that to a negative. I want to take a negative affirmation and show how to shift it to a positive.
You know, one of the most amazing things about that question, Pamela, is that in my opinion now, it's so simple that we've made such a big deal out of it that we've now made a hurdle before we've even begun to deal with it because we think it's such a big deal.
That's true.
And that's the problem with our lives. Most of the time, it's the attitude we take to it before we start something that creates the outcome. And we believe that we have to make this huge shift to change what we believe about ourselves and how we act. Because what you believe and what you think is how you act. Would you agree?
Absolutely.
So one of the things that I would suggest people do is start being very introspective. And again, I cover this in my book. And the reason introspection and thinking about yourself and where these belief systems and thoughts came from is critical. And the reason I give that example is this. Sometimes we trace ourselves back to where our belief system was formulated and who said that about ourselves. Now, if we can then come back and say who it was or why I came to believe this or why I am the way I am today, if we can trace it back to source, to where it started, can we begin to fix it?
What's your thought?
Yes, of course we can. At the end of the day, if my mother says this about me, okay, and I can trace it back to my mother said this about me and this is how I am, I can then ask myself this question. Is that what I believe now and do I believe it? Now, if my answer is yes, I can continue to have that belief system and that thought that matches what my mother told me. Or I can choose to say, you know, my mother told me that. I choose not to believe that anymore. That's not who I am. And I'm going to take these steps to change that. And so you go to where it started, and then you begin to realize, do I want to believe it? And then if you don't want to believe it anymore, you begin to change it.
And I think perhaps somewhere in there, because a lot of times, you know, what we learn from the people around us who we care about is often incredibly powerful. So even if there's a little sort of glitch where you say, well, but I have to believe it because my mother said it, you can also remind yourself that mother's not perfect. Mother was doing whatever mother was doing, and you really can make a choice to believe something different and to be different.
Yes. And one of the things, Pamela, I've had in my book about that is this. You have to do your own personal leadership, okay? I've written a lot about that in the book. And the reason I talk about that and I discuss it in detail is because the term personal leadership means simply that. How do I personally lead myself? Have I done the introspection? Have I done the questioning? Do I believe what I've been told down the road by different people? And have I done the work to change that? That's my own personal leadership.
Okay.
I have chosen to do that, and then I can lead myself personally in a different direction.
And I think sometimes if you find yourself getting stuck in the do I believe it, ask yourself what proof you have. I find myself doing that often. I will say to people, what is your proof that X, Y, and Z is true? And as you go through the layers, very often they discover that the proof is non-existent.
And that is very true. And the other point that I'm looking at with people who are able to change their belief systems and their lives is very simple. Is what I'm doing now and believing working for me? Do I have the life I have and the life I want?
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't have the life you want and you're not happy with it and you have to make some changes, then you have to go back again and do some introspection and look at and set some goals and know what they are. It's in the book of how am I going to change where I am now to where I want to be. I call that a gap analysis. Do I know how to set a goal or plan to do that? How am I going to measure it? Is it tangible? What's the outcome I would like to have? And you begin a program of self-change and self-development. But there is a strategic focus in that. It's not just positive thinking. There's action behind it. Introspection, gap, strategy, focus, self-discipline, change, change thought, change life.
It sounds like you're saying and that you believe that everyone, no matter their circumstance, has the ability to sort of recraft how they see themselves and then recraft how they are sort of living this life.
I absolutely believe that because I've seen it done, all the work I've done over the last 15 years in organizations, some very large corporations and small privately held family businesses. I have seen that, and I've seen people come up to me and say to me, you know, the techniques that you've shared and what you've done, and they could be CEOs, they could be managers, they could be people who are working as administrative assistants, it's changed my life. And the reason is because you simply have to give people tools to understand what you've just mentioned. Every single person on this planet has the ability to change their life if they want to do the work and govern their own personal leadership to do so. There is a way to do it. You just have to be given some tools.
Can you give us an example, if they're readily available to you, of a sort of a small mom and pop environment in which you were able to affect change? So many times in those situations, because it's family, it just gets to be so complicated.
Oh yes, I mean, you're right, and that's a very complicated issue because you have fathers, founders, it could be mothers also, who by default feel that their son should be put in a position of leadership because it's their son.
Mm.
And the way that you can affect a family business is you have to show the father, or if you put the son in that position, that this person has been put in this position, do they have the skills to do it? Are you just putting them there because it's a hierarchy? Do they have the leadership skills? Do they have what I call the soft skills? And sometimes you might find the father will sit down with me and say, no, he doesn't. But you may not have thought of it that way. So the way you can affect the situation is, you know, maybe I'll sit with your son or your daughter, and maybe we should look at some of their leadership skills and abilities because that's what they will be doing. Have they worked on their own personal leadership? What issues do you feel they have that they're bringing to the table that would affect the organization? So the father may say to me, because I've worked with him for argument's sake, well, that person doesn't have great communication skills. They're very autocratic, and I need them not to be that way. I need them to work with people.
Mm-hmm.
Thereby, I work with the son, and I would work on that skill. So how I affect the company is by looking, do you have the ability to do what you're going to be given to do? And it doesn't mean you can do it just by default because you're someone's son.
Right. In the instance where the person, son or daughter, in this small family business, doesn't want the role that the founding parent has put them in, then it sounds to me like there's work to be done on both sides.
Absolutely. There is always work to be done on both sides.
Okay.
Now, you know, go ahead.
No, I'm waiting for your answer.
Yeah, there is work to be done on both sides. There has to be acceptance by the father or the mother that the person they would like to do this no longer wants to be in the family business. And so that has to work with acceptance and transition. And then from that point, who's actually going to take over and who's going to do it? So you have to work in two areas. You have to work with the fact that the person has to honor. And again, that comes down to the person who's in charge, who's the founder, has to honor the other person's reality and has to realize that even if they force this person, not that they would to be in that position, would they get a good result?
Mm.
No. So it's respecting each other's place and then have, from that respect, find someone who can do it, hire someone from an outside source who can do it, and let your son or your daughter go on to be whatever they need to be and support them in that.
And I
and
think
help with that too.
The other piece to that is not seeing son or daughter's interest in something different from the parents as being a reflection on the parent, because a lot of times parents get stuck in that morass as well.
Yes. And again, you know, what it really comes down to in every avenue of our life is how much work have we done on ourselves to mm-hmm. be able to view things from an outside perspective on other people. In other words, one of the great traits of great leaders is that they've worked so much on themselves, and not just leaders, it's people, that when someone comes to them with a different attitude or perspective, they're open to it. They don't need to be validated or see anybody as a reflection of themselves or what they've done for that person. They just see the person as an individual trying to express themselves, and they support them in that.
You know, if more people had that capacity. Well, I think people have the capacity. I don't know that they actually exercise it. But if more people were able to see differences as simply that and not an assault on whatever they believe in, we would have not only a different world, but we'd have a different planet, I think.
Absolutely. I've touched on it here in the book. And I when I do leadership training with leaders who run organizations, and not just leaders run organizations, people, individuals, it's in your own personal leadership, it's one of the things I focus on, because it's an absolute fundamental necessity to understand that the focus is not on you. It's not a reflection on you.
Mm-hmm.
You have to have your own game together before you can look or listen to someone else or stop taking things personally.
And that can be more than a notion for some folks, the ability
exactly.
to stop taking things personally. You've walked us through some of the things that you might work on a family business with. What about those large organizations where there are perhaps hundreds or thousands of employees? What kinds of difficulties have you been called in to address?
Well, there is a particular tool that I use, and it measures a gap analysis. And one of the things that I've been called to address in a lot of organizations is communication.
Okay.
And the reason that communication is such a big issue is that you can have a vision as a leader, and sometimes that vision isn't clear, but can you communicate? Can you have people buy into that vision from the managers to the supervisors all the way down the organizational chart? Are you able to sell that to the organization? Can you communicate it? So one of the things in larger organizations where there's many, many people and mm-hmm. there's many tiers to it is how do you translate that from the executive team to the rest of the organization, create buy-in, and then have them act accordingly to accomplish it?
It seems like that would be difficult and challenging, but it is the challenge, I think, of most large or perhaps any organization that has a leader, is to find a way to communicate it in such a way that others buy in.
Yes, and in order to do that, Pamela, you have to have a lot of skills.
Right.
You have to have a lot of what I call soft skills. You have to be able to, what I call flex style. You have to be able to, as we discussed prior, to take the focus off of yourself and listen to your managers and to other people as to what their needs are or what their input may be to your vision. And again, that's covered in the book, and how you're going to interact with them to get them to do what you need them to do. People do things for their own reasons. You have to find out what their reason is for helping you and what your reason is for giving them your vision. And if you can have that exchange and it's meaningful, you can get something done. Why would I do something for you, a manager to a leader, if I don't believe it and I don't understand it? What's in it for me?
We're going to take a break, but when we come back, I'd like to pick up right there. The notion of what's in it for me is an important one, and a lot of times I think folks don't ask that question of themselves or others. Folks, we're going to take a break, and we will return in just a moment, so you stay where you are. Hello, folks. We are back. This is Pamela Brewer. You're continuing to listen to this conversation with Linton Bergson, who is talking to us about purposeful vision. Linton, when you brought up the issue of asking yourself, what's in it for me? So many times folks have a difficulty with actually acknowledging that that is a question that they have for themselves, or that it's a question they have a right to ask. What might you say, how might you counsel those folks who have a hard time with that concept?
Once again, a great question. And the way I would counsel it is this. When you know what your value system is, what your goals are, what your principles are, it's a very good and simple place to start to know when you're looking at someone as a manager, for argument's sake, what it is that you need to have addressed. In other words, if my values are A, B, C, and D, my principles are A, B, C, and D, my morals are A, B, C, and D, and I need those met, my financial needs are A, B, C, and D, I need these things met, or at least one or two of them, and you need to express that, then you have some of your needs being met by the manager, and that's what's in it for you. But if you don't know what that is and you can't articulate that because you haven't spent the time in your own personal leadership honing that down, then anything will do. And that's what happens with most people. And then they find that there's nothing in it for them, but they never mentioned it and they never knew what they wanted anyway.
So there is absolute not only value, but almost a measure of urgency in doing your own personal analysis, if you will, about what's in it for you. That's not a bad thing. That's a critically important thing.
Pamela, I can't tell you how many people that I've sat down with when I've done coaching and I'm in training. I've asked them, what it is that you'd like to see out of this? What do you need to get? And they look at me with a blank stare.
Mm-hmm. I believe
you have articulated that for yourself and you say you're unhappy now. How will anybody else know what you want?
Right.
What is your need? And, you know, even when you look at marriages or you look at personal relationships, I think you would agree with me on this. Your values, your principles, your goals have to match, correct?
Right, absolutely.
And so there has to be some exchange of work. But if you don't know what they are, anybody will do or anything will do.
And then you can find yourself being exhausted and angry that the anybody who will do actually isn't doing so well.
Exactly. And this is the point. Is when you sit with people, and this is what I found, Pamela, to be a critical factor, just ask them about themselves. That's what great managers and leaders do. What is it that's important to you, Pamela? What makes you tick? What is it that I would need to do for you to make you feel good? What's your main goal in life? Tell me about your principles. Who are you? Now, if you start coming from that point, then I can look and I can say to myself, you know what motivates Pamela. I can really help her. And then I can think to myself, do her goals and who she is work with mine? I think we can do something meaningful together here. Now we have an exchange, a reciprocating energy that's a win-win for both of us. Now, however, if that's not the case, I may have to rethink my strategy now about having you on my team.
And from that perspective, when you ask that person, what do they want, what's in it for them, what's important to them, there's some awareness, particularly if it's a manager asking you that, there's some awareness that you could lose. You could come out on the other end of this and not get that job or that position or that promotion or that project. So how do you sort of shut down that chatter and say what's true for you?
Well, again, this is authenticity. This is a great, great point you brought up. It's what I call the authentic communicator, okay? Always be authentic about who you are. And this is the great thing we talked about earlier about the intangibles, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we think, well, you know, if I say and be who I am, then you're right. The fear may be, well, they won't want me, correct?
Yeah, right.
All right. Let's say that happens, that if I am who I am, I'm an authentic Linton or I am an authentic Pamela, and somebody says, I don't want you because I don't like your authenticity. Have I really lost anything?
Absolutely. And I think that's such an important piece to really underscore, that if the person doesn't want you because you are being who you are, that's actually a gift that you found out early enough to get out.
Exactly. But here comes back to a original part of our conversation about faith.
Mm.
Now, faith and fear kind of work hand in hand, because if you have faith, you can't have fear. But if you have fear, you can't have faith. It's kind of a double-edged sword. But what happens is that if you've done again, and I cover this in my book, and that's a whole different conversation about the depth of personal leadership. If you've done your stretch goal, right, and you found out more about who you are and what you can attain and what you can accomplish,
okay,
and you live in your own authenticity. If someone says, you know, Pamela, I don't like you for who you are, you know, because of what the work you've done yourself and your own stretch goals and how you've gone about your own self-talk, you know, that's okay. I'll find something or someone who does. And that self-confidence is there because you've done it before and you know you can. Your self-talk and chat is different than most people's. And so those people go forward that way in life because they've done their work. They usually, not say their life won't be challenged, because life always has challenges.
Right.
But their authenticity and confidence is much more than those who say, you know what, I'm a little fearful. I'll just settle for you.
Let me ask you this. In these times, you know, on the one hand, we are hearing that the economy is getting better, and I think in many ways it is. But there are still a whole bunch of people for whom the economy has not risen to a living wage level. So for that person who's sitting in front of the prospective new employer, and it may be a job that is deadly dull and they know they're going to hate the job, but they hate being hungry even more. What happens in that kind of a scenario? Because I think that those things come up a lot nowadays.
Well, you know, I believe it's Maslow's principle, if I'm remembering correctly here, that our basic needs have to be met.
Yes.
101. And if those basic needs aren't met, we can't function about anything outside of that. So, you know, if we have our basic needs met, and that's what we understand we're doing for now, in my opinion, it's livable. Let me give an example of that. Let's say I'm hungry and I need a job. It might not be my ideal job, and I know it might drive me crazy for a while, and in fact, I've done these things in my own life. But I'm thinking to myself, I'm hungry, right? Mm-hmm. I have to eat. This is a means to an end. It's not the end. It's when you think it's the end, you're done for.
Right.
But if you say it's a means to an end, this is a mundane job I'm doing right now. I have to do it because my family has to eat. I have to eat, and I get that. But I have a plan. Now, if you don't have a plan to do something else to get out of that mundane event, you're going to get depressed, you're going to get diminished, and you're going to get in a place where you don't want to be. It's a domino effect because you'll start taking out everybody in your life.
Right.
So do what you have to do. It doesn't mean you have to stay there.
And, you know, I think the thing that's so important about what you've just said is a lot of times when people begin to listen to conversations about living your purpose and being mindful of yourself and all the things that we're talking about, they can sound and feel so esoteric, so far away from what their personal life is, that it doesn't seem useful. And so for the fact that you're able to say, do what you need to do, but have a plan that is mindful of what you know you want and what your vision is, I think that's so incredibly helpful for folks to hear.
Well, you know, Pamela, if you look at some of the people who have achieved and accomplished a lot in their life, they were doing a lot of mundane work before they achieved it.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason is quite simple. They had a vision. And what sustained them through that period of time in their life was their vision. That's where they were. That's what they were doing at the time. But that's not what they thought was going to be the outcome of their life. And I think that that's very important for us all to understand. We have to understand something very important, all of us. And I know it sounds something people hear all the time, that we're incredible and that we have all this ability and all this talent that is, you know, unfathomable, and then we can use it whenever we want. Yes, that is true, and it can be esoteric, as you've mentioned. But the point of the matter is that it's real. All you have to begin doing is to put a little plan in place to begin to exercise your muscles to see how big you can grow them, how strong you can be, little by little. But if you don't exercise the muscle at all, it will atrophy.
Absolutely.
And all I'm asking is exercise a little muscle. Everybody, just a little muscle. I don't care how small it is, but that little muscle, if you exercise it, by default becomes stronger. Have a little bit of faith. Have a little bit of belief in yourself, and it will grow. If you don't have any, you don't have a prayer.
So you can start really, really, really tiny, and that's okay. And I think a lot of times what you're saying is it's actually preferable and powerful.
Absolutely. You know, there's in my book here, I've given some notes on how to lose some weight, or some things you may need to do or have to lose some weight, and different things that you might need to apply. And the reason I gave that, it's very simple. You start small.
Mm-hmm.
And like anything, you don't go down to the gym and spend 3 hours there, or 2 hours there, or an hour there.
Right.
You would go there, and you might spend 50 minutes at first. Now, it's like anything in life. If you only go once, will you get a result?
Gotcha.
No. You got to keep doing it. And that repetitious thing is what changes our self-talk. And that small example anybody can use, they can say, I'm going to go today for 15 minutes. I'm going to go tomorrow for 15 minutes. I'm going to go the next day for 15 minutes. Now, if whatever happens, they decide to stop going, then what happens is, with our self-talk and our mind, is that our mind and our self-talk never changes, because guess what happens if you only go once and you stop?
Well,
your mind says, I told you, you were a loser.
Exactly. I told you couldn't do it.
Three or four times.
Mm-hmm.
And then the mind will no longer have control over that thought. And you will no longer think you're a loser. You'll feel good about yourself.
So those tiny, measurable goals, it can be 15 minutes, it can be 5 minutes, it can be a minute. If you start and believe in yourself, and then I think notice what's true, and what's true is let's say you set a goal for a minute and you actually meet that goal, then I think what's true is that you've met your goal. That's pretty cool.
Exactly. And again, I've written in the book, and then you do that, and then you take some time to celebrate a little bit. You say, you know, this is where your personal leadership and where you start changing things in your life. You know, you take some time to say, you know what? People told me I couldn't do that. I did that. I'm more than I thought I was already. Mm. I'm going to do it again. And you go and you do it again. And then when somebody said to you, you know, you were going to the gym, right? Yeah. Did you go? Yes. It could be whoever it is, right?
Right.
And then they said, bet you only went once. No, I actually went 3 times this week. Now, you're beginning to change the way the world perceives you, because they thought you were a one-time shot.
Gotcha.
And as the world changes perception of you, that's healthy. You change your perception of you, that's healthy. Guess what happens? Your world begins to change. You change your perception of yourself.
And I think in being able to take true ownership of your own thoughtful perception of yourself, you are now empowered to be more expansive in your life, whatever your choices are.
You are absolutely right. And one piece of advice I would give your listeners, which is very, very important, assume nothing. Find out. Prove it to yourself. Just because somebody told you something doesn't make it true.
Right.
So go find out. And most of the times people will tell you, from whatever place they're coming from, whatever fears they harbor, they're going to tell you they can't do it. Because people who've done things out of the extraordinary will tell you you can. And in my book, I call that your personal culture. Who you surround yourself with is going to be a very big play in your life about who you become and the support group you have. So if you have people not supporting you, and that's your personal culture, and your self-talk is not so strong, where are you going?
Yeah, no, we're good.
No, we're good.
Linton, we're going to take a break. And when we come back, I'm going to pick up right here and talk more about your personal culture. Folks, Pamela Brewer, you're listening to Mind Talk. And when we come back, you'll hear more about how to see your vision and know your purpose. We'll be right back. Hi, folks. Pamela Brewer, and we are now going to talk about your personal culture. Linton, start with explaining to us what that means. What are you referring to when you say your personal culture?
What it means is this. Everyone in your life, everyone you have chosen to surround yourself with is in your personal culture. And that means they're influencing you. They're influencing the way you think, the way you act, and the way you behave. And so if you have people in your personal culture who are going to support you and love you when you start a new endeavor, then that will help you to complete that endeavor. They're your friends. They're your family. They're your coworkers, people who you hang out with outside of work. They all have an influence on you and what you think and what you become and where you go and who you see and what you think about yourself and how you tell yourself what. That is your personal culture. Because if somebody says something to you, as we mentioned earlier, and they're in your personal culture, and you choose to believe it, and you want to go in a different direction, you can't go because you're choosing to believe the people around you, not yourself.
Gotcha. There are, and we've all met that person who can say horrific things to you and say, but I'm just trying to be honest. You know, I'm really your friend. I just want to tell you the truth.
You know, I love that question. That's a wonderful question. And I'll tell you why. When people say that to me, I'm your friend and I want to tell you the truth. Whose truth?
Good response.
And that's my question to myself and to them. And I've, you know, had people know me for a long time and dear friends I trust implicitly. And they're those who have their own agenda and they're miserable. So their truth is their miserable agenda focused on me. So whose truth is it? So if somebody had been cheated or lied or whatever they'd done by husband or boyfriend or girlfriend, whatever, and you met someone and they're jealous and they say to you, well, you know, always ends up the same, they're just going to cheat and lie to you, and you say, oh, yes, is that true?
Gotcha. You can make it true.
They're projecting.
Yeah. You can make it true or you can choose not to.
Oh, yes. You can sit down with your friend and you say, you know what, Mabel, you're right. Or you could say, you know what, that's not, you know, I'm prepared to give this person a chance. I'm not going to be that negative. Besides, that's an assumption you're making based on your own life story. That's your truth.
And that kind of thing happens a lot in relationships when you hear these conversations that are peppered with all men are alike, all women are alike, all everything is alike. It's that person's fear, that person's experience, and it's not really true.
No, it's not. And here's the an interesting observation about that in the three states of consciousness. Because what happens is this. If you're sitting in a personal culture with people who would say to you, well, all men are the same or all women are the same, you choose to believe it. Guess what stops functioning?
Tell me.
Your imagination. Your ability to feel or think or see something different for yourself. because you can't see or feel something different for yourself if you don't believe it.
It's true.
So if somebody says that to you, say, you know what, I understand what you're saying, and I understand how the game is played a lot in relationships. I understand all of that. And you choose to look at things differently because you've done your own personal work on your own personal leadership. Then you know what your value system is, what your principles, and how authentic you are. When someone comes into your periphery, you're going to state, you know, this is who I am. And you're not going to settle for somebody who says, well, that doesn't work for me. So you need to change yourself. As long as you're being reasonable, you'll just move on into a different direction because you have your values and principles in place and you know what it is you want. And believe it or not, that's how, we can get a little esoteric here, the universal consciousness works. You have to know what it is you stand for and who you are, whether it's Gandhi, whether it's Nelson Mandela, whether it's Martin Luther King, and the world responds to it. That's what happened with them. This is they're one person saying, this is my authentic self. Mm-hmm. This is who I am. This is what I stand for. This is what I believe. It's good, it's honest, and it's honorable. So whatever we want to call it, source, whatever we want to believe, and they believed it with enthusiasm and passion. It was their vision. It didn't fluctuate. Whatever that intangible we talked about earlier is responded. Mm-hmm. It's the same as personal relationship.
So as you are doing your own personal leadership analysis, if you will, are you saying that it's reasonable for you to evaluate who and what is a part of your personal culture and some folks stay and some folks don't?
Yes. It's like organization development when I go into a company, right? You go into a company and they may do some what we call a gap analysis and find out what it is their values and their principles and their mission statement is, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then they'll find out throughout the organization, we're making this change. We've done some reflection. We've done some introspection on the company and whatnot. And these people no longer fit. And these people do.
Gotcha.
Same in our own life. If we're not constantly looking at our life, right, and we're looking at what is valuable to us and where we're doing some introspection, we may change. Well, if we change and we're growing, which hopefully we all are, then it makes a common sense statement to say that maybe the people around us would change and our circumstances would change. But if everything's remaining the same, then where's the change?
So let's say you've got this friend who's been a, I'll put friend in quotes for reasons that will be obvious in a minute. You've got this friend who's been a part of the family for years, and he or she has broken every social, moral, ethical law that you can think of. But you understand that because they've had a really hard life. And even though you don't like what they're doing, you want to be at least that person who is there for them, who's in their corner, because after all, they've been a friend for a very long time, and you understand their bad behavior. Does that person belong in your personal culture?
Yes, as long as they don't influence you to behave like them.
Okay.
You can have who you want, as long as you have a strong enough will, and again, comes back to authentic self, right? So you can say, I understand, and I talk about compassion, sympathy, and empathy in my book, and you can have compassion. You may even have, if you have similar experiences, empathy, but it doesn't mean that that person is going to influence how you behave. You're simply going to be there to help them and be there for them, and you don't let them abuse you or your energy and allow them to project onto you and make you feel guilty about certain things, but you can certainly be there for them to the best of your ability. You can have them in your personal culture as long as they don't become a detriment to you and you find yourself giving you more time than you would want to, or they're calling you up and wanting you to do things that you really wouldn't want to do. Then you have a right at that point to say to them, you know, I'm here for you, but I can't do that.
And that's okay.
That's okay. Because if you start doing things that are against your own value system and your own principles, guess what happens to you?
Gotcha. You wind up exhausting yourself.
Exactly.
And sort of pulling yourself apart by the seams in a lot of ways.
You do. You start tugging at yourself and you become at odds with yourself. And not only does it affect you, it affects everything you do. So, yeah, you can keep them in your personal culture. As long as you are understanding and they're not influencing your behavior, you're not changing your value system for them, you're listening to them, but they're not overstepping their bounds with you either.
Can we talk a little bit about compassion? We hear a lot about that today, and I'm not sure that folks typically have a broad understanding of what that does and doesn't mean. What does compassion mean to you?
It means that when I see something, whether it's on television or on the street, my heart stops. My heart stops. It affects my heart deeply. I might not be able to do anything about it immediately, but I term compassion within myself my connection to humanity. So compassion for me is understanding every person's dilemma, and then understanding we're all in the same boat together. However, some people really went off track and they got a life that really none of us would want, or how they got there, what the causes of that, again, we don't always know.
Right.
But to be able to feel in our heart a certain amount of connection to that person as another human being and want to try and help the best we can and be the best we can so that we can make a difference not only in our lives but in other people's lives, then we have compassion for a fellow man, and it's called having an effect on ourselves for the greater humanity of the planet. It affects your heart.
It affects your heart.
Yeah, it really does. You can see something, and some people are indifferent, you know, but compassion to me is looking at another human being, and no matter what situation they found themselves in, and feeling some type of compassion. You're a human being, after all. You may have done some very awful things. I understand that. I don't know how you got where you got, but my heart goes out to you.
Folks, you have been listening to a conversation with Linton Bergson, who is author of Purposeful Vision, See Your Vision and Know Your Purpose. Linton, how can folks learn more about you and your work?
I have a website, lintonbergson.com, which is updated, and so they can go to that website.
Can you spell that for me?
Sorry?
Can you spell that for me, Linton?
It's Linton Bergson, not Onsen, .com.
Okay, terrific. Linton, thank you so much for spending time with us today. Your book, Purposeful Vision, See Your Vision and Know Your Purpose, again, it's a small book, but it's got some pretty large thoughts and ways to think about creating for yourself the vision and the purpose and the life that you deserve. Thank you, Linton, so much.
And thank you, Pamela, so much for having me on your show.
All righty. Folks, thank you for joining us on this edition of Mind Talk. Remember, you can listen to this program again on demand and any program from Mind Talk at myndtalk.org. The managing producer is Jim Brown and 26x2 Communications. Mind Talk is provided daily as an educational public service, and it is not intended to replace treatment with a medical or mental health professional. If you would like to be in touch with me directly, that number is 301-654-5286. That's 301-654-5286. For more information about Mind Talk, of course, you can go to mindtalk.org. And folks, always, always remember, if it is unacceptable, that is exactly and precisely what it is. Unacceptable. Take care.